Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Hello, it's Phil Bush. You may know me from podcasts such as Scrambled Eggs, and that's it. Brief interruption for this of this previously recorded podcast. Quick note, recording this on the evening of July 4th. First of all, happy birthday, America. Hope everyone is having a safe and festive 4th of July. Second note, the news broke today that Jalen Johnson has chosen Duke over Harvard of the Midwest, Wisconsin, and Marquette, among other schools. So in the podcast you'll hear recorded here shortly, we recorded this on the evening of July 3rd. That news had not yet broken. We briefly talk about recruiting and possible players coming in. So just wanted to leave a little note, let you know what was going on there in case you're wondering why we didn't talk about the Jalen Johnson news in the podcast. Not a shock that he did not go to Marquette, A, and B, that he ended up choosing a blue blood like Duke. But it wouldn't be the 4th of July if we didn't take a little time to rub it in the face of our hated neighbors to the west, that the Badgers, who were convinced Jalen Johnson would go there, have once again been disappointed. So with that, we'll turn it over to the podcast we recorded. Hope everyone has a safe holiday and a good long weekend, and we'll talk to you soon. Enjoy.
Hi, everyone, and welcome into an off-season check-in here on Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. Joe McCann, Phil Bush here with you once again. And we're not going to talk movies this time. I hope you enjoyed that last time. That was fun. Before we actually have basketball to talk about now.
Yeah, there's actual, like, reportable news to discuss.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about Marquette's schedule. We are going to talk about a new member of the Big East a little later in the show, maybe check in on some former Golden Eagles in the NBA at the very end. But Phil, the big I'll just talk with the most recent news, just a nugget that came out just before the 4th of July. Brett Nelson is leaving. Congrats to Coach Nelson. He's going to be the new head coach at Holy Cross, so he is Bill Simmons' new favorite college basketball coach. But, you know, he'll be missed at Marquette. I don't know if there's a whole lot to break down about an assistant leaving, but I think it's notable that Wojo has mostly kept his assistants together, especially, you know, Stan and Nelson, for a few years now, because good assistants tend to leave, whether they're hired by bigger programs or they finally get the head coaching job they want. I'm happy that Nelson got it, but, you know, it's from a Marquette's perspective, they're going to hate to see him go.
Yeah, I mean, the pessimistic side or the shade-throwing side would say, well, yeah, I mean, Marquette hasn't accomplished much, so who would want their assistance? But I'm not here for that. I'm here for I think it's a good opportunity for Coach Nelson. I think it's worth noting. I mean, it is a bit unusual this late in the game, you know, midsummer to have an assistant go, but the previous coach whose name escapes me at Holy Cross.
Yeah. He retired, just like in June. So he kind of put his program behind the eight ball by retiring. So they had this is, I guess, a relatively quick hire, considering that I don't know if they were expecting that. But that's why leaving so late. So, but that may – I don't know if it really crushes Marquette too much recruiting-wise. I mean, I don't know how involved he was on the guys they're talking to. But still, Wojo needs to go find another assistant at some point, sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I don't think – and this is – you know, I'm not picking on Brett Nelson, but I don't think Brett Nelson was, like, a big lead on recruits, right? Like, that's – that's by and large the purview of Stan and Wojo and
Dwayne. Yeah, I think Nelson is widely regarded as I think Paint Touch has dubbed him the transfer whisperer. He's been big on bringing in grad transfers, you know, maybe just transfers in general, like Kobe McEwen. You know, he's the guy who's maybe active on social media. He's the guy who's getting to the DMs and maybe starting some of those conversations about whether these guys want to transfer to Marquette, and he's done a pretty good job, you know, bringing some guys in. So they lose that, and for what it's worth, he's widely respected as a talent developer, you know, as far as developing shooters within the program. And that's why Holy Cross hired him, is skill development, reputation as a recruiter, particularly when it comes to transfers. So great hire for Holy Cross, tough loss for Marquette. They'll just find some way to replace him. I have no idea who would be a candidate to replace him. Like familiar names may come, you know, come up if you're just speculating. Like, Travis Diener was once an assistant, on the
Director
Marquette staff.
Of basketball operations.
Right. Yeah. He was on the staff, but I don't know if he's necessarily done playing. But if he were offered an assistant job, I think that would be interesting to him. But I don't know if there's mutual interest from both parties there. But you know, Wojo just may hire anybody. I don't really know much about Dwayne Killings when he was hired. So I guess we'll probably get an announcement probably within the next few weeks because, they probably would want that third assistant on staff before they go on their Europe tour, which is coming up in the first week of August, I believe.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because, like you said, the previous Holy Cross coach retired. I believe in part because his wife is battling cancer and kind of just decided to retire and do the family thing, which totally makes sense. But Nelson got hired within 2 weeks of the previous coach leaving. So it's not like Wojo was fully anticipating this and had names ready to go. I don't know if he's got just a short list of folks that he'd want to grab.
I would think most college coaches probably, are always networking, knowing that more often than not, you're going to have to replace an assistant probably every year. Because assistants leave all the time, whether contract's up, things aren't working out, guys get better jobs, guys get head coaching jobs. So I would think most coaches and athletic directors probably maybe just have guys they know or guys they've met on the recruiting trail say, if we ever have a spot open, maybe I'd give this guy a call. So yeah, maybe that'll happen.
I'm just curious if he's going to go, quote unquote, within the Marquette family or if he's going to go kind of outside, maybe even more of his extended, kind of his Duke family or folks, like you said, he's met along the way, right? Like there's a John Harris out there and a Travis Diener with connections.
Yeah, like if you're thinking Marquette connections, yeah, obviously John Harris jumps out to me because he was let go at SIU Edwardsville. I don't think he has a coaching job at the moment. Would there be mutual interest there? I have no idea. I don't know if he and Rojo have any kind of relationship at all, but it's a name Marquette fans would recognize. But we'll probably find something else about that in the near future. And effect on recruiting, I don't know if it would have that much because I think most of the assistants are involved with all the recruits to some extent. So as long as Stan's on the staff, I really don't think Marquette is going to take much of a recruiting hit with Nelson moving on because ultimately these guys commit to the head coaches, not the assistant coaches, right? Assistant coaches leave all the time. As long as the head coach you commit to is there, you're probably going to continue the relationship, right? No one is currently committed in the 2020 class to Marquette, but they are talking to a lot of guys. I'm really not going to break them all down because there's just so many names out there. I don't think there are any commitments imminent at the moment, but Marquette is chasing some pretty big time dudes in the 2020 class, and they need to be because obviously they're losing a lot of talent after this year.
Right, absolutely. So it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out.
So good luck to Coach Nelson and Holy Cross. Who knows? Maybe we will meet in the first round of the NCAA tournament again sometime in the near future because that happened before.
Yeah. Hey, what time is a flat circle? It'll happen again.
It is. So we'll talk. Move on now to the talking point. We are planning on being our lead when we said, "Hey, maybe it's time to do a podcast." That was over the weekend. We finally got to recording it on Tuesday. What is today? Wednesday.
Wednesday, July 3rd.
Yeah, so we're recording this on Wednesday. But yeah, so the schedule is out, so we know Marquette's complete non-conference schedule. No real surprises as far as the teams were announced. I mean, all the big names we pretty much already knew. We don't need to necessarily go through it game by game because you guys can probably see it for yourselves. Go to gomarquette.com and click on the schedule and see the games coming up. But as far as the games we didn't know, Phil, anything that jumped out to you that's either surprised you in a positive or negative way?
I don't know that I'm kind of neutral so far. I think I have a sense of that it might be positive, but not who we play, but when we play. I'm kind of surprised by the playing Wisconsin so early in the non-conference November 17th. Apparently the coal hole was just a hop in place in December that that Wisconsin and or the fact that Wisconsin starts its conference schedule in like the first week of December these days because the Big Ten is crazy. We're getting crazy like that in a little bit, but we'll talk about that in a minute.
We'll talk about that in a minute.
But yeah, I mean, the fact that we're playing Wisconsin so early in the non-conference is, I mean, it's going to be unusual. It's going to be interesting to see. Quite frankly, the reason I lean towards that might even be a positive is with what Marquette has coming back and with the international trip that they have, I think an early season matchup definitely favors Marquette with its experience coming back as well as the time playing internationally that Wisconsin won't have.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so. You know, two of Marquette's first three games are against Big Ten teams.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they could end up playing a third Big Ten team because Maryland is in the Orlando Invitational. Still weird for me to think as Maryland is a Big Ten team, even though it's been like, what, like 8 years now?
Yeah, something
but,
like that.
Yeah, like, but yeah, that, and Maryland might be a top 10 team in the country this year. They might be really, really good. So, but, you know, it's certainly a challenging schedule when you have, you know, Purdue should be strong. Wisconsin may not be a top 25 team. Maybe they will be. I don't know. I really don't know what to make of Wisconsin right now without Ethan Happ, but we'll see. It'll be a tough game because it's a road game, of course, and a rivalry game. And again, I mentioned the Orlando Invitational. We don't know the bracket for that just yet, but I think it just seems inevitable that Marquette is going to play Texas A&M just to have the Marquette buzz thing. I bet that would be like a second round game is going to be my guess. Like I don't know if they'll be paired each other against each other on the first day. Maybe they'll try to set that up as a semifinal game. And I don't know. I'm guessing maybe if I were designing this bracket, I might try to set it up for a Maryland Marquette final or a Maryland USC final, I guess. I'm trying to think like the strongest team because the teams in the Orlando Invitational, if you don't know, it's Davidson, Fairfield, Harvard, Marquette, Maryland, Texas A&M, USC, Temple. Temple has a new coach. Texas A&M has a new coach. It's Buzz, of course. Maryland should be a top 10 team because they got Jalen Smith back. That's going to be huge for them. And then, you know, USC has some pretty good recruits. They have a five-star kid who just came in. I forget his name. Mobley, yeah, because his younger brother, Evan Mobley, is the number one kid in the 2020 class. Probably going to come into USC as well, but thankfully we don't have to deal with him. But so I would guess probably Maryland and USC might be on opposite ends of the bracket, and so maybe try to set it up so it's Maryland, you know, Maryland and Texas A&M in one semifinal, maybe. I don't know. I'm not sure, but I think we would all anticipate a Marquette A&M matchup, and it would be great if you're talking about strength of schedule if Marquette could also get a game with Maryland in this thing, because that would be three quality Big Ten teams on the schedule, plus a game at Kansas State in December. And then, you know, look at the rest of the schedule. Paint Touches did a pretty good job breaking down the anticipated ranks, like looking at T-rank, the projections for some of these teams. Grambling State is not the terrible game you think it is. They return a lot. I mean, they're not going to be like a top 100 team, but they would probably be pretty far north of 200. When I say north, I mean better than 200. Yeah. So they may be like a 150-ish team this year. North Dakota State's not bad. There are a couple other games that are blah, but you're going to have a couple in the non-con. Overall, I think it's a fine schedule.
I think it is a schedule that's built, and kudos to the Marquette staff for doing this. This is a schedule that's built for precisely what's going on in college basketball right now, right? Like there's only one quote-unquote potential clunker, right? Like a 300-plus KenPom team on there. You've got a real nice, you know, kind of gem of a schedule and scheduled team in terms of North Dakota State, right? North Dakota State should be the best team in their conference this season, but they're still quote-unquote beatable, right? Like, you know, we don't want to give Rothstein any you know scheduled by game tweets about Marquette, you know, nightmare, you know, whatever.
Yeah. This isn't stuff like the yeah, the it's time. Not quite the high quality by game that like Buffalo was, but it's still a nice by game. That
correct.
Marquette will be heavily favored, should win, but it's a game that probably helps your net numbers.
Yeah. Well, and the interesting thing about the schedule is like that most of the name, quote unquote, name games that the casual fans are going to recognize, those are kind of on the road, right? The at Wisconsin, at Kansas State, the Orlando Invitational, obviously get Purdue at home, which is a name game. But like we said, the rest of the non-conference is solid in terms of like, if you win all the games that you're supposed to win, it sets you up nicely for conference season and performance well in the metrics like KenPom. It maybe doesn't have, you know, somebody might look and go, oh, North Dakota State or Grambling State or Jacksonville and go, whatever. And fair, but they're solid, you know, 150, 200, 250 teams that will make a positive impact on the schedule, assuming Marquette wins. And there's no reason to anticipate they should.
Right. I just hope the Gavitt games go better for Marquette than they have in recent years.
It's not been good.
It has become a Gavitt games tradition that Marquette just gets pounded in the Gavitt games.
Well, and Marquette, is this the third time Marquette's playing Purdue in the Gavitt games?
I think it feels like a lot, but I think it's just the second.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. I think they played Purdue at home, like it wasn't a Gavitt game a long time ago, and that didn't go well. Gavitt games last year obviously lost by 23 to Indiana. 2018 lost by 15 at home to Purdue. 2017. Michigan, that was a neutral court game. Never mind. That was not a Gavitt game. I think they might not have been in the Gavitt games that year. So not 2017. What was 2016? Housed by Iowa 89-61. That was a home game. 2015. Ohio State, that wasn't a Gavitt game, though. I think that was the return game of the infamous boat disaster.
Yeah, that was the aircraft carrier slippage game.
Yeah, well, that was the game that was like right. The return game after that one because the aircraft carrier game was not played. Wojo, he's done pretty well against Wisconsin because I guess, what is he, 3-2 against Wisconsin right now as a head coach? Because, yeah, he lost 15, won 16, lost 17.
He's won 17, the last three in a row, didn't he?
He's won the last two.
Yeah,
is 3-2. He's 3-2 against Wisconsin, but he's been destroyed by every other big team he's played, including Penn State and the NIT two seasons ago. Hopefully Wojo can have a little bit better luck against Big Ten teams not named Wisconsin. That would be nice.
Want a little bit better luck with the early non-conference Big Ten games because those, other than Wisconsin, have just not gone well at all.
They've been really rough. So, but overall, you know, solid schedule, especially if you get at Maryland added in Orlando. At Kansas State, it'll be a return game from that. It's part of the Big 12 Big East Challenge. And so that'll be in Manhattan. That's never an easy place to play. Even though Kansas State should be down a little bit because they did graduate quite a few players, but still going to the Octagon of Doom is never fun. And then they'll wrap it up with North Dakota State, and then Central Arkansas will be the last game before Big East play begins. Don't have a date on that. You would assume it would be either New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, somewhere around there, January 2nd, something like that. So, pretty good. Phil, you mentioned earlier about how the Big Ten is a little crazy with its 20-game conference schedule. Well, that's coming for us next year. Because we have a new guest, you know, it's been a little bit since it was official, but I thought we'd talk about it as it relates to Marquette on our podcast. And of course, as you all certainly know by now, UConn is now back in the Big East. They will be rejoining the league, I guess you could say, in the summer of 2020. So they will begin playing in all sports except football, of course, in the 2021 season. I was excited to see it. I know there was a lot of anxiousness over them still having an FBS football team and what that means for their future. But I think the way the language in the deal is written, you know, I think the Big East really protected itself from UConn getting too many grand ideas about its football program. Like the Big East or UConn cannot house its football program in a Power 5 league. So it can't just temporarily put football in the ACC if the ACC offered that and play in the Big East because they know that would open the door to them going to the ACC eventually. So they can't do that. If they want to go to another league, they have to pay a huge, huge exit fee. And it's so large that there was no way UConn would even consider it, like, in the next 10 years, unless they got in just a ridiculous, ridiculous offer from, like, the ACC or the Big Ten or something. And I just don't see that coming. So I think the Big East protected itself as far as any, like, fears about what any football ideas may, you know, creep into UConn's head. But, you know, just as a fan, I think it's cool to have UConn back in the Big East.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Well, and, like, all the quote-unquote concerns about, like, with their football program, and you kind of highlighted it for the most part, but the amount of money they're paying to exit the AAC, get into the Big East, and the concessions they've made around the football program tells me that they are going to be investing in both men's and women's basketball. Obviously, UConn women's basketball is amazing.
Yeah, don't discount what that will do for the league. I mean, right. It's not going to, like, change the league, but when you get a nationally recognized program, you know, not every women's basketball program is profitable. UConn's is big time. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, all of the women's teams in the Big East are excited now because they're going to have some – they know there's going to be one game every year where the arena is just jam-packed because, you know, fans will come out to see – hope their team beats UConn. And then all the UConn fans come in because UConn's – they got fans everywhere.
Right, and don't dismiss the impact, the positive impact that has for Marquette women's program. I mean, new coach with Carolyn Krieger going off to Penn State. Mm-hmm. You know, the opportunity for Marquette to play UConn twice a season, and that sort of stuff, and kind of have visibility with recruits. You know, even if UConn beats Marquette like a drum that first season, I think there's only positives that come of it as a result. But, you know, back to kind of the men's side of things, I think I'm encouraged because UConn's kind of, you know, with the Kevin Ollie stuff, who just got hit with a 3-year show cause.
Yeah, how hilarious was that, by the way? Your penalty is you have to vacate the last two seasons. UConn's like, great, sweet.
Yeah, cool, that, like, never happened. Great. Yeah.
And also we can now fire Ollie for cause and may not have to pay him. Because it's documented that there were violations. So, like, UConn made out like a bandit there. But, yeah, sorry to get off topic.
That is one of the few times that an NCAA member institution really collaborated with the NCAA to make to make it really visible that they violated, yeah. conducted violations, right?
Yeah, please look at our cheating. It would really help us out.
Yeah. Hey, Emmerett, if I don't I'm going to get up and walk away. If I don't trip and fall on my way out the door, we definitely cheated and you should definitely investigate us.
Absolutely.
So I think that I absolutely, you know, like, I expect that their program's fallen on hard times, you know, with or without or caused or not caused by Kevin Ollie and other things. So yes, they're not the program they were, you know, 10 years ago. But, you know, quite frankly, you could say the same thing about, say, Georgetown. You know, I think they're going to invest. I think they're going to get raised visibility. I think as a whole, collectively, the conference will be better for it. And one thing, and this is maybe conspiracy, Phil, I don't think we value enough or people who are like, don't need UConn. The fact that they're in Connecticut, ESPN's in Bristol. There's a lot of UConn grads that end up at ESPN. I just think it consciously or subconsciously enters into more visibility within the sports news realm.
Yeah, even though, like, you know, Big East games are not going to be on ESPN, of course. But again, just whether you like it or not, you just cannot deny the fact that ESPN drives the conversation when it comes to national sports. Right. Yes. If it's on SportsCenter, if it's on First Take, if it's on ESPN Radio, that's what the average sports fan is just going to gravitate to. Right. You know, if ESPN's leading every show with NBA free agency, then that's what dominates Twitter. And that's what dominates. That's what people talk about. And, you know, if ESPN decides to put College Game Day at, you know, Duke, Carolina, well, that's a bad example because that's always a big deal. If ESPN puts College Game Day at Michigan, Ohio State, we'll say, well, it's a big deal. College Game Day's there. You know, that just makes it a bigger deal, right? And because that's where just the average fan say, hey, what's going on in sports? Let's turn on ESPN or go to ESPN.com. So, but yeah, I think having that visibility there is because so many people at ESPN, because it's just right around the corner, know what's going on with UConn. And I think maybe in an indirect way, that's probably maybe a reason why UConn developed into a power in the, you know, 80s and into the 90s, right? Like how does, you know, how does school in Storrs, Connecticut all of a sudden just be one of the greatest programs ever? And it like really didn't have much before ESPN even became a thing. And then all of a sudden, it, you know, it's men and women's programs were winning titles all the time. So that probably had an indirect effect because, ESPN was probably always there, always on television. But you know, and you mentioned, UConn, are they what they were? No. But for the last few years, they've been trying to sell recruits on playing in the American Athletic Conference.
Right.
Like, you know, you're telling kids, join our league. You know, we go into some great environments. We go to play Tulane. We play East Carolina. We play Tulsa. You really want to go to these venues? I don't know, man.
it was like the old Conference USA, but with a 2-drink minimum.
Yeah, it was a tough sell. But now they can go. UConn can go to these recruits in the Northeast, in states like New Jersey and New York and Massachusetts and the Washington D.C. area, and go to these guys and say, "Hey, look, you're from the Washington D.C. area. Guess what? We play Georgetown twice a year. You know, you're from the New York area. We play Seton Hall and St. John's twice a year each. You'll have 2 games right here in front of your family and friends, in addition to all the games here at UConn. Don't you want to play in this league?" And they, you know, it's a little more appealing.
Right. Well, and the impact, and think about the impact from a Marquette schedule standpoint. I mean, I see no reason why they wouldn't continue to have a round robin, you know, each team gets played twice from a conference schedule standpoint. So, you know, from a conference standpoint, that's 2 extra games a year. So at a minimum, Marquette's going to drop at least 1 non-conference game. They could drop 2, but who knows what that'll be.
Yeah, but that's an interesting question. You know, as we kind of maybe steer the conversation back to how UConn being in the league affects Marquette. How will the non-conference schedule look going forward? Will Marquette, you know, lose maybe some of its quality non-conference games? That's a concern. I've seen some people throwing out, could the Wisconsin game be jeopardized? Because, you know, we've already had to move it into early November to accommodate both teams. Could that be in trouble going forward? I would hope not. I would hope that would be the last game that would be affected, you know, as Marquette's trying to figure out its future schedules. But if you're hoping Marquette's going to, like, drop 2 bye games in favor of the 2 UConn games, I don't think that's going to happen. I think you may never see Marquette schedule a team like Buffalo again at home because of this. Because having Connecticut at home in the conference schedule is good enough where you don't need to go out and schedule a team, a quality mid-major team like Buffalo to try to get them to come to your arena. So I think those are the types of games you're going to be losing. We'll see, and it may kind of depend on the team any given year, right? We've seen Marquette schedule very tough schedules when they think they've had good teams, like this year and the past year, and we've seen Marquette maybe schedule a little on the softer side when they thought they were going to be kind of young. So I will be very curious to see how Marquette will schedule going forward with a 20-game league schedule. Do you have any kind of sense on that, Phil, or maybe opinion on that, where, like, maybe what direction the program may go as far as non-conference scheduling going forward?
Yeah, I think what we would lose 1 bye game, right? Like, because, you know, adding 2 games, they've got to take at least 1 game away from the non-conference. Like, you're not going to pack the schedule that deep because I think, you know, we kind of referenced it. The conference schedule is going to have to start a little earlier, right? Like we might be talking just after Christmas as opposed to, you know, New Year's time frame. So you're going to need room in the schedule. I think they probably drop 1 bye game in the best case scenario. But if they end up dropping 2 games, I definitely see them dropping another. Because UConn, for, you know, where, no matter where they are now, they're still a top 100 program, right?
They're definitely a top 100 program.
Right. So adding 2 top 100 games, automatically through the conference season. You don't need to schedule a 100 or 100 to 200 round game. So it'll be interesting to see how they shape up if they give themselves a little more slack in the non-conference, if you will, and take either easier bye games or just eliminate a bye game altogether. I think at the end, whatever it ends up being, I think quite honestly, and this is the positive of it all, I think it just gives Marquette more freedom on their schedule. They have fewer non-conference games they have to figure out, which means they have more flexibility on dates. And I also think that gives them a little more cushion to say, we couldn't schedule the best non-conference, but that's okay. We got a really solid conference schedule, so we'll be fine.
And keep in mind, there are some things that they are locked into for at least the short term. We got a few more years of the Gavitt games, and Marquette may not necessarily be in the Gavitt games every year. I forget kind of where they are as far as how many Gavitt games they have to participate in.
I mean, hell, Michigan State hasn't been one in one yet, have they?
Yeah. I don't think they have, yeah. But considering how Marquette gets pounded every time in the Gavitt games, if we want to sit out a couple, maybe that'd be cool.
let's schedule the Pac-12.
Yeah, and then with the Big 12 Big East challenge was perfect when it was arranged because it's 10-10, but now it's going to be 10-11, so there's going to be one team left out every year. So maybe if there's a year that you're left out, then maybe you can go get another quality game to replace that, or
come on, let's be honest. We know DePaul will. Well, DePaul's on our side, so who in the Big 12 would be left out? Who's the worst?
Well, it's 10 games, right? So there'd be an 11th Big East team that would not have anybody to play.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right.
So, there's going to be a Big East team, and that's probably going to have to rotate every year.
Nah, just make it DePaul every year.
Yeah, sorry, DePaul. Nobody wants to play you. Not even Baylor.
No, not even a little bit. So yeah, it's gonna be interesting. I mean, next season's gonna be exciting. And the other thing, and I tweeted about it. Not that this is a podcast about things Phil's tweeted, but
it could be.
It would be boring and pretty terrible. But I mean, content. I'm excited to have. I just feel like UConn is kind of their fans, and UConn generally are like a fun villain. Right, I
would agree with that. They're a villain you love to hate. The No Escalators Twitter account is hilarious.
Yeah, and not in like a I'm angry way. Yeah. Just in a like, yeah, I'm annoyed way. You know.
Yeah,
like,
he just likes to poke the bear a little bit, and he's funny.
Yeah, and so I'm excited to have UConn back. I mean, I got back at the No Escalators account a little. I just posted a picture of Novak in the first Big East game against UConn when he hung 41 on him.
Marquette, by the way, Marquette men 6-3 against UConn all time.
So we ain't scared.
We're not scared at all.
So I mean, it's fun. It's I know there's some folks that are trying to find downside to this, and maybe it, you know, I'm an eternal optimist. I think there's nothing but positive coming out of this. It's another storied program. It's a deeper conference schedule. There's more that, you know, we've gotten out of the news cycle. It's kind of like the old, oh, it's the old Big East. They're back and that sort of thing.
One thing I want to say about that, because like some people who kind of sneeze at the move and say, yeah, UConn's back, but it's still not the old Big East. And to that, I just simply say, no shit, it's not the old Big East. Like, no one is saying it is. No one has ever said this current Big East is the 1980s Big East or the early 2000s or, you know, mid-2000s mega Big East, which was fun. With Syracuse.
For the 3 years it lasted.
Yeah, you know, it didn't last that long, but boy, it was awesome when it was a thing. But no one is trying to say this is as good as, you know, the mid-80s when, you know, every league had, not just the Big East, but every league had all their best players staying 3 or 4 years. Like, even the current ACC, it's not the old ACC when everyone was staying 3 or 4 years at every school. It's not that way either. But compare the Big East to other leagues in college basketball, and it compares very favorably. And I'm giving Paint Touches more credit here because they were on this because they, you know, pointed out after the Ion College Basketball podcast, Gary Parrish was saying, is it a top three league? Well, if you look over the last 5 years, it has been a top three league consistently. Almost every year, I think every year but two, it has been ranked in the top three in KenPom as far as college basketball leagues in America. Last year was its worst year since its rebirth. I think it finished fifth. But it's been average 3.5 since it's come into existence. I think the tricky thing saying is the Big East going to be a consistent top three league is the other teams around it are always going to change, right? It's like, it's not always, like one year it may be ACC, Big 12, Big East, Big 10. Next year it may be ACC, Big 10, Big East, Big 12. One year it may be ACC, Big East, Big 12, Big 10. It's always going to shuffle a little bit. So who's ahead of the Big East may move, and who's behind the Big East may change. But I feel like the Big East is probably going to consistently, more often than not, be one of the top three leagues college basketball-wise in America.
Yeah, and like the identity, like how much is the identity of like it is a basketball conference paid off, right? Like that just has to matter. I mean, the only reason not to go conspiracy Phil again, the only reason that the Big East is not like talked about as a top three conference, even though statistically it shows up there, is because the Big East is a Fox Sports property.
Yeah, because it's back to the ESPN driving the conversation
exactly.
Thing. ESPN's even though it's basketball college game day is not as popular as it's football college game day, ESPN's college game day will never go to a Big East game. Like even if Villanova was one and Marquette was two in the country and they were facing off on a Saturday, they probably wouldn't go there.
No, I don't think they would.
And I don't blame them for that, to be clear. I understand. Right. It's a business decision. But again, it goes back to the driving the conversation thing. And I think that is because, like I said before, when people are bored, say, hey, I wonder if there's any sports on. What's on ESPN? All right, I'll just watch this game. Right? No one says,
right.
Wonder what's on FS1. Oh, it's a Big East game. I'll watch this. So, yeah. I mean, the FS1, financially, it's been pretty good, but it's still not ESPN.
Right. Well, and I mean, like, take last year, for example. I mean, last year, for sure, the SEC, by metrics, was probably a better performing conference than the Big East was.
Yeah.
But historically, over the last 5 or 6 years, there's no way you can say that. But the SEC certainly got more visibility, again, because they are an anchor conference of ESPN. And that's fine. I'm not mad about it.
They have a program with a huge national fan base in Kentucky that gets on TV a lot, and I get that. That's just business. That's just the way it is.
Right. So it's no issue with it. It's just the reality of we just have to be honest with ourselves. Like, we have a really good conference. Mm-hmm. One shining pod from the Ringer talked about when UConn joined the Big East, and Mark Titus kind of made reference saying, you know, the Big East is really good. They're just not like. They're not a sexy conference, and I get that. Like, you know, because
I think he said like I don't know how else to say it. Just people nationally just don't want to talk about Xavier and Butler, and mm-hmm. I get it. Like, and the thing is, the only thing I would come back on that with, there are probably only five schools nationally that people want to hear every week, right? People want to hear people for whether they love them or hate them. They want to hear people talk about Duke. They want to hear talk about Kentucky, North Carolina. Sometimes Kansas, sometimes Arizona, UCLA when they're good. That's about it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And so the only way, and hey, by the way, challenge extended to Marquette, the only thing that the Big East itself or the teams within the Big East could really do to change the narrative more, other than continuing to do what they're doing, is somebody, please, for the love of God, win the conference that's not Villanova and then go on to win a national championship that's not Villanova. No shade of Villanova, but like everyone then, the casual fan, just thinks, yeah, the Big East is that Villanova conference that all the other teams exist in.
Yeah, like I would even stop short. We don't need another team to win a national title per se. I mean, that'd be great if Marquette or Georgetown or St. John's or Xavier won a national title. Yeah, that'd be sweet. But, like, I would say they just need, another team to win the league. Not only win the league, but just go deep. Just go to the Final Four. Just, like, have two teams in the Final Four. And if one of them is not Villanova, like, that'd be awesome. Like, if you have Marquette and Georgetown in the Final Four in 1 year. right? Like something like that. But yeah, there is a perception that Villanova is the only decent team, and the perception may be reality there, is Villanova is absolutely carrying the league. Because as close as Xavier was to really being a huge, like, national player, they really fell short in the tournament with their two best teams. Like that 2 seed that lost to, what was it, 10 seed Wisconsin, and yep. then they had that 1 seed that lost to Florida State. It was a 9 game. It was like they didn't make it out of the first weekend was the bottom line.
Yeah.
That just crushed the chance maybe for Xavier to go next level, and then Chris Mack left.
Well, Xavier's acting like a mini Cincinnati.
Yeah. Hey, mini Cincinnati. They had a mini coach. Now he's gone. But yeah, I know what you're saying. But someone else needs to be consistently national stage. And yes, selfishly, we would love for it to be Marquette. Take the bias out of it. The team you would love for it to be is Georgetown. Like, you would love for Georgetown to be like a top 10 team year in and year out. Like, that would be the best situation. Just because they have a huge national following still. They have tons of fans that still remember the 80s and miss those days. And they were great into the 90s, too. Like, you know, Allen Iverson, those days. We would love for that other team to be Marquette. I think Georgetown would be ideal if talking about the league as a whole. But, yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah. So, I mean, it'll be interesting. Again, I think the bottom line of this whole conversation has been, for me, a good one is, hey, nothing but positives coming out of this UConn rejoining the Big East. Welcome home. I hate absolutely. You. Welcome home.
Yes. I'm looking forward to hating you once again. And I think the last point, I think you kind of touched on it, was even if UConn continues to just hemorrhage cash on football, they're still going to not, like, hold back on basketball. They'll continue to spend on basketball. I think just this move indicates, look, we're all in on basketball. We're going to try to make football work. And, you know, who knows, maybe their football program may fold down the line, or maybe they'll figure it out in independence. But I really don't care as long as they have decent basketball teams, and I think they're committed to that. So I'm excited for that. Big East tournament, maybe just get a little bit bigger now because there'll be more Connecticut fans there every week or, you know, every year. I'm guessing, like, the bracket will just change. Like, now instead of having to finish in the top 6 to get to Thursday automatically, you got to finish in the top 5. So I guess the 6th team will have to play in that first day. So the 6th team will play the 11th team, and the winner of that advances to face the 3rd team, if I'm thinking that through correctly.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I think that makes sense.
I think it'll be an 11th team. So it'll be a triple header the first day, and then after that it'll be the quarterfinals. So
yeah, well, and hey, the only other aside I would put out there is we've now got the model for a university with a really terrible performing football team and a first-class basketball team. Syracuse, your spot is ready.
I don't think Syracuse football is ever going to fall that far.
Oh, I don't know. It's pretty terrible, but yeah.
They'll never give up on that. But who knows? Maybe we'll revisit that down the line, but Syracuse football will never get that.
I do want to ask one last question before I leave this. So of the old, quote-unquote, Big East teams, either the Super Big East or the original Big East, which, if you added a 12th team, which one would you want back?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know, speaking from a Marquette perspective, I'd like to have Notre Dame back.
Ooh, yeah. And the Mont, right? They're going to stay independent in football. That's just period.
Yeah, but I think as far as the, like, speaking league-wide as a whole, you know, yeah, I think Syracuse is the team you would want back. Just as a team. Speaking of teams you'd love to hate, that's the one.
Exactly.
That's the one you would want back. But, yeah, as far as Marquette rivalries, I would say Notre Dame 1, Louisville 2, and then probably Syracuse would be my third choice. But, yeah, in the fantasy world of revisiting the old Big East, I would say Notre Dame would be my choice. But
see, I would my top three would be Syracuse, Notre Dame, and I feel like, and it's tough because their program has fallen on hard times. But I would actually put Pitt number 3.
You know, Marquette and Pitt had a little bit of a rugged rivalry there for a few years, and there were some really tense games that just got. I'm reminiscing now. I'm dreaming of the old Big East, and it's making me sad. We're happy with what we have. We'll be fine.
We're grateful for how it worked out. Everyone's fine. We're good.
Yeah, so looking forward to New Big East version 2.0 starting 2020. Welcome back, UConn. Should be fun. Before we get out of here, just maybe touch on a few other news and notes that's happened since our last podcast, which has been like 2 months ago. So this is going to sound like old news, but because it kind of is. But I guess we know Greg Elliott is going to miss pretty much the rest of the summer. He had another injury. This poor guy just seems to have just bad luck with injuries. I guess he's not going to get to play. It was an ankle this time, right?
Yeah, he had ankle surgery. And we don't know the nature of the injury, but the fact that he hurt his ankle and then had surgery on it in the same day, not great.
Yeah, and so he's going to miss, I want to say, like, it was said 3 to 4 months, and I think the high end of that, even if it is a full 4 months, technically he would probably be ready to go for the first game against Loyola Maryland. But right. I would not anticipate him being a full go, you know, a guy with a lot of minutes. And this is why you bring in a guy as Samir Torrence. And, you know, you keep the redshirt thing open because maybe you need him, right?
Yeah.
They may not redshirt anybody if Greg Elliott is never completely healthy. I would hate that like hell for Greg, but that you have to accept that as a possibility. So that's why it's great that Samir Torrence reclassified, is on the roster, and will be eligible to play this year if needed.
Yeah, well, and I mean, this is the tough part. Like last year, we talked about Greg. Like he's now had two wrist injuries and now an ankle injury. We talked about like, well, could you bring him back this past season? Bring him back during the conference season, and where I didn't think it was a great idea, and I'm glad they didn't bring him back. It might have helped the program, but you know, you got to do what's best for Greg and give him a full year. Where that was an okay idea was it was a wrist injury and he had plenty of, you know, his cardiovascular, if you will, was good to go. So he may not have had game speed minutes, but in theory he would be in good condition.
Right.
With an ankle injury, you know, being off 3 to 4 months, and maybe we don't know the nature of the injury. You know, maybe similar to an ACL, he can do cardio, you know, straight line running, you know, 2 months into the injury or something. And this is unfounded discussion on my part, but you just worry about the nature of his conditioning when he comes back from this injury, if he hasn't been able to run and cut and kind of stay in game shape.
You just have to sit on a bike and pedal as much as he can, and
right.
But yeah, that'll be a concern because he may not. Yeah.
So I think the bottom line is, no matter how long it takes him to come back from injury, I think you're going to see Gray, assuming he's fully healthy and ready to go, I think you're going to see spot Greg minutes in the non-conference. But I don't think you're going to really see him worked back into the rotation or featured in any heavy way until the conference season. I think it's just going to take at least a full month or two to get him back up and going. So it'll be interesting because to see how they handle it.
Yeah, especially because your second game is Purdue and your third game is Wisconsin.
Right,
it's not like you can
right.
just kind of – I mean, yeah, you'll have that Loyola game, but who knows how healthy he'll be and ready to go for that first game. But it's not like you have four cupcakes that you could slowly break them in late in the game when you're up 15, 20 points. It's just not going to be the case against Purdue or Wisconsin. And maybe you'll be up 30 against Wisconsin. Maybe you can do that.
That would be great.
That'd be awesome. All right, and I guess we'll just wrap with this, Phil. Do you know where your favorite Marquette player in the NBA is right now? Because it's a little hard to keep track.
the musical chairs have been moving.
Yeah, no Marquette player, best I can tell, is going to begin next season on the same team he started last year on, maybe even the same team he finished last season on. So Dwayne Wade retired. We all knew that. I know everyone up there in Milwaukee.
I'm gonna stop you right there. Don't be shocked. I'm calling it right now. Does Dwayne Wade come out of retirement to play on LeBron's team in the Lakers?
Probably not. But he is. I assume living in Los Angeles now because his son transferred to Sierra Canyon High School.
Yes.
So baby Bron and baby Wade are playing together this season for 1 year at Sierra Canyon. So. That'll probably be a conversation, but I would guess in the end, no.
Okay, I'm just putting it out there. It's a possibility.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe he says no at the beginning, but then after a few injuries and while LeBron gets pissed at his teammates, you know, December, January time, he may give his buddy a call, or while they're sitting there watching a Sierra Canyon game, say, hey, this is cool watching, you know, Wade throwing lobs to James here, isn't it? Maybe something we could think about at the Staples Center. I don't know. Just throwing it out there. But, yeah, that's a possibility. I wouldn't rule it out, but I would, if I have to place my chip somewhere, I would say Dwayne is done, especially after his farewell was so grand and extravagant last year, right? Like, he made a big deal about saying goodbye all year last year. And then to come back for one more, I just couldn't see it. Can't see it.
But don't disagree.
Okay. So I'm sure everyone up there in Milwaukee is excited about the Milwaukee Bucks latest signing, Wesley Matthews. He is with the Bucks now. I think that's a great fit. Just another shooter. They got him for the veteran minimum. So didn't have to pay him much. Guy who was pretty efficient in limited minutes, not the most minutes of his career. You know, Wes is probably, you know, I'd say definitely has signed his last big contract as a pro. But, you know, he's still got plenty of years left if he wants to play a few more years. And I think the Milwaukee Bucks are as good a place as any to do it.
Yeah, I'm really conflicted. So they signed Wesley Matthews, which I think is a great signing. I mean, he can give them 15, 20 minutes a game, solid rebounder, spot up three, should help keep the defense, or the defense is honest and spread the floor for Giannis. You know, and this is me speaking as a Milwaukee Bucks fan. For those of you on the podcast who aren't Bucks fans, you know, go screw yourself. I mean, what? But the other thing I'm conflicted there on while we're on the Bucks though is, so they signed Matthews 100% for. I think it's going to be great. It's going to be really exciting from an energy standpoint. But they also reunited the Lopez twins, which is giving me PTSD from the Stanford Marquette game.
Oh yeah,
which featured Wes Matthews and Jarrell McNeil and that whole crew. So I don't know how to feel about this.
Yeah, I follow on Twitter, you know, Dan Marquette fan. He is he put it the best. He said, "I just now forgave Brooke for 2008. Now I have to start the process all over again."
Oh.
So that is pretty funny that the Lopez twins are both in Milwaukee now. But I'm happy that Wesley's with the Bucks. It'll be cool for the Marquette program that Wesley will be around. I'm sure he'll drop by practice every now and then. Wojo will probably have him come speak to the team every once in a blue moon. Wesley will be he'll be on campus a lot, I bet. So that'll be cool.
Yeah, and you know, anytime you can have a tight connection with the Bucks and have them showing up or participating, that's a great recruiting tool. So,
hey, Milwaukee is the city of MVPs right now. You've got Christian Yelich, you've got Giannis, and hey, only thing left is for Marcus Howard to win National Player of the Year.
I'm for it. Zion's not in college anymore, right?
Yeah, he's not. Hey, you know, to be honest, if you're talking strictly returning players, it's got to be like Marcus Howard and Cassius Winston for right now, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
Obviously, all these five-star freshmen, they're going to make their mark. I am a big buyer on Cole Anthony. I think he's going to be great at North Carolina. James Wiseman's going to be awesome at Memphis. Now I'm shifting into my other job right now. But the freshmen are going to be very good this year. I don't know I don't be shocked if any of them are anywhere near what Zion was, but I've been surprised before. But if you talk about returning players in college basketball, Howard's as good as anybody. So he will be on the short list for preseason National Player of the Year. And I would love it if he could finish the deal. That'd be amazing. So,
and Marcus is no one is going to get a higher usage rate than Marcus this year. He's going to get the Carson Edwards treatment, I think.
He will shoot all he wants to that year. That's probably the best thing for him. So, Milwaukee, city of MVPs. Let's keep that going. A few other notes. Jimmy Butler is not officially, but it looks like he is going to, whenever all these things can become official, be a member of the Miami Heat. So one Marquette legend leaves Miami, another one goes there. So good luck to Jimmy in Miami. I'm not sure how much winning he's going to do down there, but South Beach is cool if you're rich. So enjoy it.
Yeah, might as well. Yeah.
And then Jay Crowder, who is honestly very hard to keep track of because he was like five teams in 8 years for Jay, who is just a solid NBA player. He's just a guy who is always like the last guy in a trade because his contract works so well and he gives you so much for so little. But he is now with the Grizzlies, unless he's been traded again before this podcast finishes. He was in the Mike Conley trade, so Jay's in Memphis now. So good luck to Jay there and wherever his next team is, because he'll probably get traded again because that's what happens to poor Jay. He's been a solid player. He just can't stick anywhere.
Yeah, he's got to have his suitcase packed at all times.
And then the last one, Henry Ellenson with the Knicks. I think they declined his option, so he's a free agent at the moment. But he's playing with the Knicks summer league team, so maybe they'll pick him up again and bring him back. But I
think the Knicks don't have anyone else on their roster of any consequence.
Maybe, yeah, that's the thing. Henry Ellison is a free agent that the Knicks can actually sign. So
maybe if Henry Ellison changes his name to Devin Courant or something, then they'll pick him up.
Maybe so. I always laugh at the Knicks. We still live in this world where everyone thinks every NBA free agent is going to sign with the Lakers and Knicks, and it's just not the way it goes. I'm not an NBA expert, but I do know that it's not like every single freaking player is going to go to the Lakers and Knicks every year, because they just freaking don't. They absolutely do not. So I hope Henry Ellenson lands somewhere, whether it's the Knicks or somewhere else. You know, I think Marquette fans probably don't feel as attached to Henry Ellenson because I mean, granted, he was at Marquette, but he was just there a year, and Marquette is not really a school that's used to the whole one-and-done thing. But still, he's a Marquette guy. I hope it works out for him, and, you know, he can get up to a point where he can get a nice contract and have a decent NBA career. But who knows? I would say at this point it's unlikely he's ever going to be a great NBA player. But if he can stick in the league for 10 years, you know, like Steve Novak did, more power to him. I hope that happens. But right now, he's just kind of right on the bubble, you know? He's kind of like right on that edge of, is he going to get a new contract, or is it time to go to Europe and get money over there? So we'll see what happens to him.
Yeah, it'll be time will tell, but
yeah. And then, do you see Juan Anderson? I guess he's Juan Toscano Anderson. He is he's with the Warrior Summer League team. I don't know if you saw that. So
No, I did not see that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he's like getting close to getting an NBA contract or a two-way contract or anything like that. But hey, he's playing for the Summer League, so I hope that works out for him. And I believe Juan is also on the TBT team for Marquette, if I'm not mistaken. So we'll see him in that. So I'm looking forward to that. That starts relatively soon, I want to say. I haven't been keeping up with the TBT quite as much, just following some tweets here and there. But that thing's always fun to keep track of, just when you get a little Marquette itch in the middle of summer and you just want to watch a little Marquette ball. That's pretty fun. It's Jamil Wilson's on the team this year. I don't have the roster in front of me. I know Darius Johnson Odom left to go play for another team. That was a bummer. But
another TBT team?
Yeah, he's playing for another TBT team. It's a team. Yeah, it's called Team Loyalty, ironically enough. It's run by Boogie Cousins is the owner of the team. Or not the owner, but the manager, I guess, of the team. So he's on. He got a bunch of guys together. So Darius Johnson-Odom's not playing for Golden Eagles TBT. So now I got the roster in front of me. It's Maurice Sacker, Juan Anderson, Trent Blackledge, Dwight Bikes. Joe Chapman is the coach. He's not playing. Derek Wilson, Jake Thomas, Andrew Rousey. That's the one I'm thinking about. That's the one I'm excited. I want to see Rousey in this thing. So those are the Marquette players on the team. There are a few other guys who are not Marquette alums who are on the team. But hey, I think Andrew Rousey will thrive in this format. I think he'll be
100%. It absolutely favors a volume dead-eye shooter.
Especially with the way they end the games with that, the Elam ending, they call it, where, you know, you're 7 points away from victory if you're leading, then you just fire up a couple of threes and it can happen really quick. So I'm excited to see
it. It is interesting. This is the first year where, and There's a few folks on the roster that I'm trying to figure out their connection. But this is the first year where it's not been a purely Marquette roster.
They had a few of these guys were on the team last year. Like Elgin Cook was on the team last year.
Was he? Okay, I didn't remember that.
Simeon Bowers, he's from Auburn. He didn't play much last year, but he was on the team. So they have used some non-Marquette guys to fill it out the past year and this year. But, hey, anybody who's willing to help us win – you know, a share of $2 million because the fans get a cut of that. You can maybe win $1,000 or so if you finish on one of their ranking system if you retweet them enough and crap like that. But it's a fun
little tournament. I would point out the one thing that's crazy to me is Trent Blackledge is listed as a small forward. Really?
Is he?
Yeah.
Maybe in this thing. I don't know. Maybe it's just
anything than 2 feet from the basket.
I don't think anybody is listed as anything. Oh, all right. Bowers is listed as a power forward. I was going to say, I think everybody's either listed as a guard or a small forward on the team. But maybe in this league, it's probably for the best because this thing is more perimeter oriented than the NBA. I mean, this is like, there's kind of a, almost a pickup feel of just guys you're just pulling up from three and banging them down all game, but it's kind of fun. But if you haven't seen it, check it out. It's on ESPN in the summer, and if you're just bored, don't have any Marquette things to follow, which we really don't, there's that. So I enjoy it.
I agree.
Anything else? Anything else before we get out of here, Phil? I think it's about time to wrap this bad boy up.
I think we've carried on for a substantial amount of time. It's been a good off season once we got past the Hauser drama and we're just kind of enjoying life until the season starts here a couple of months from now.
The who drama?
I don't remember.
I don't recognize that name.
I'm not
as always, folks. As always, folks, we thank you for checking in here on Scrambled Eggs. That's the name of this podcast, right? Here on Crack Sidewalks. Hit us up on Twitter with your thoughts on the conversation. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF 23. Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. We have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. You could also rate, review us, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate that. And we also go to cracksidewalks.com. That's where we post the podcast there. You can leave comments on cracksidewalks.com. If you are not of the social media variety, you can post comments there. Phil, any final thoughts before we wrap it up?
Have a happy and safe 4th of July. Go America. And UConn sucks.
Love it. Seashells and balloons, everybody.